From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, The Power of the Brain with Neil Slade. Here's what's happening. Hurricane Dorian was upgraded just moments ago to a Category 2 strength as it was expected to continue gathering force over the holiday weekend as it heads right toward Florida. As of an hour ago, the storm had maximum sustained winds of 105 miles an hour, placing it just shy of being a Category 3 hurricane. Dorian was expected to remain a major hurricane through Friday, hit Florida's east coast by Monday, could hit as a Category 4 hurricane. That's big. Let's do a real quick intention experiment. Hey, it can't hurt. All of you collectively just think about that hurricane barreling down on Florida and slow it down. That's all. So just keep thinking slow, slow, slow. Maybe it'll be a tropical storm by Monday. Who knows? But just give it a try. We'll see what happens. The U.S. Justice Department has decided not to prosecute former FBI Director James Comey, despite an internal investigation that found that he improperly leaked information to the news media. The Justice Department's Office of Inspector General said Comey asked a friend to share the contents of a memo with the New York Times to pressure that department to launch an independent investigation into his conversations with President Donald Trump. In the memo, Comey described a meeting in which Trump allegedly asked him to drop the FBI investigation into Michael Flynn, who at the time was his national security advisor. Flynn has since pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Comey signed off on an investigation into President Trump's campaign, possible ties to Russia during the 2016 election, and later emerged as a prominent critic to the president after the president fired him in May of 2017. President Trump and many of his allies say that the investigation should never have begun. The U.S. market for commercial real estate flashed a warning sign in the first half of this year. For the first time in 7 years, overseas investors in office buildings and retail space became net sellers of property. So it's going the wrong way. Chuck Coppice, of course, head of the IDP Consulting Group with us. Chuck, they keep saying the shoe's going to drop. What do you think?
Yeah, we're seeing these indexes falling. Real estate's off, of course. And there's lots of volatility out there, a lot of uncertainty. And, of course, we're in a political season, as you know. The global economy is facing a slowdown. Someone said a recession is when your neighbor's out of work and a depression is when you're out of work, right? And we are seeing the indexes like the Baltic Dry Index, FedEx, the Freight Index, the rig sales, Caterpillar, for example, low sales since December. These are flat wages. It's all pointing to recession, of course, the bond market. And like I said last week, it's not really Trump's fault. He's just, you know, he's the one in the White House right now.
That's right. It's his chair.
Yep. So, and trade wars certainly don't help these matters. So, you know, my next news, I'm going to be dealing with the public pension funds, demographics. They are fully exposed to this very overvalued stock market.
Okay, Chuck, appreciate it. And what it's going to take for this thing to blow up, who knows? Well, they say Israel and Iran could have the final war between the two. That they've been fighting, of course, that Iran has been supplying Hezbollah and groups like that. Let's check in with Charles R. Smith. Charles, I want your take on this. So far, you've been right on North Korea. What about Iran and Israel?
This is mainly a PR job, both by the Iranians and Israelis. Netanyahu is in an election, so he's got to look tough. The Iranians have had some really bad setbacks recently, so they've got to look tough. Their rocket just blew up on the space pad. The Hutus aren't doing too well, and, you know, the economy isn't doing too well because of the sanctions imposed by Trump. It's possible, but the Iranians have two words that could completely bring their economy and their country to its knees, and it's called Karg Island. 85% of all of their oil goes out through that one site. So if the Israelis get tangled up with them, one F-35 strike to Karg Island, and Iran is down the tubes.
And you said F, so there's that distinct possibility that there could be a war between those two nations.
Well, there always is, but the problem right at this point is the Iranians aren't stupid. They will attack via their proxies, Hezbollah and others in the West Bank. They're not going to do it directly, although they have armed groups before with very sophisticated missiles, such as cruise missiles. The Hutus, for example, in the Yemen war have had some very sophisticated equipment. So that is a problem. That was what the Israelis were striking at with their drones, which, of course, angered the Iranians. But then again, like I said, the Iranians trying to get into an open war with the Israelis. If Karg Island goes down, their economy is shot. No money for the kleptocrats, no money for the Ayatollahs. Forget it. Money is what drives the issue. So more noise, a little bit of fighting, proxy, maybe a couple of drone strikes. Other than that, the New York Times and the others are just going to have a field day screaming doom.
It could happen. Thanks. Appreciate it, Charles. A new study conducted at Michigan State University has found another big benefit to getting and staying hitched. Married people may be less likely to experience dementia as they age. Conversely, divorcees were at twice the risk as married individuals to develop dementia. Divorced men showed an even greater predisposition for dementia than divorced women. The first part of the study analyzed four types of unmarried individuals: divorced and separated, widowed, never married, and cohabitors. The research discovered that the divorcees and the highest risk of dementia. So there you go. Up next, predictions and prophecy with John Hogue on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, 16 minutes after the hour, wherever you may be. John Hogue writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy. He is definitely considered a world authority on Nostradamus and a best-selling author as well. His work has brought him international acclaim. He's been published in 18-plus languages. He has appeared in well over 1,000 radio and television shows on continents all over the planet and is a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. Also does some live stage shows with us every once in a while. John, welcome back.
Hey, George. It's good to be back.
What a time.
Where to begin?
Oh, my gosh.
My mantra every time I come back.
I mean, it is just unbelievable. It just doesn't stop, John.
Well, you know, it's what Art Bell and used to call about the quickening. You know, things are speeding up towards an evolutionary breakdown or breakthrough.
You can feel it too, can't you?
In both cases, there are so many fronts, and I mean, even just now here, we had this insignificant tropical storm that looked like it was surrounded by dry air and was going to be snuffed out in the mountains of the Dominica Island, as they thought it would parallel another hurricane that did that. And then within a short 48 hours later, it's now looking not only to potentially be a Category 4, but before I came online, I was watching the Weather Channel, and the scientists there were even saying that it might actually do what happened a few years back on the Panhandle, when this incongruous hurricane suddenly rose into that hot water of the warming oceans offshore, just suddenly right offshore became a Category 5. So the indications are not very good right now. And of course, now that we have gone out of the El Nino pattern into a neutral pattern, the wind shear capabilities offshore are not there. So in long story short, for weather, it's a wide open door for not just this hurricane, but I think at least three other major events between now through October.
We just did an intention experiment, John. I'm going to be very curious to see what happens on that in a couple of days.
Well, I heard it, and I wanted to contribute a point, is that if the slowing down actually is the thing that's concerning the scientists now, because it looks like the way this high pressure, I would focus everybody on the high pressure that's slowing this hurricane down to literally spend like 24 hours on the coast and then 24 hours later in Central Florida, as the signs of things are going now. It's also looking like it may go closer to Miami before it starts to buzzsaw off the Florida coast. That's how it's kind of looking now. So if people want to do that kind of a collective thing, I would suggest that they try to weaken the high pressure to mm-hmm. move farther to the east to allow this storm to roll up the Atlantic and out of the whole picture.
And dissipate away, maybe as a tropical storm or something.
Yeah.
About 3 weeks ago, we ended Mercury retrograde. Anything unusual happen?
Well, it's interesting. There were some significant events because Mercury was transiting backwards in the final degrees in the end of July into early August, August 2nd, into a cardinal sign of Cancer, which is the natal position of Mercury in Cancer opposed Pluto in Capricorn. Now, all that astrobabble aside, what that translates to be is that we're in this unique situation as a nation. We were born to roughly 250 years ago when Capricorn was where it is now in the final degrees. Sorry, Pluto was in the final degrees of the sign of Capricorn. This was the birth sign of the United States. And now, 250 years later, we're in a midlife crisis as a nation. And its core is this opposition, this kind of tug of war between the collective mindset of Americans and what kind of defined us. It was built and constructed in 1776. Now the building needs reconstruction. You know, it has systemic cracks. It's 250 years of history, the edifice of our democracy. So it's now a time for doing what Americans have done often, but especially now, to redefine what it is to be American, what is our democracy all about, and what are the direct ties to that democracy to our economic power. So there was a period of time at the end of this retrograde where being a cardinal sign in Cancer means leadership, where in retrograde, meaning that the forward process of egos and pride has a hard time dealing with looking at themselves and reviewing the situation. So leaders and government officials will make rash decisions. That's the potential situation. And unfortunately, a number of potentially rash decisions which could guide the future of the economy, the future of the American hegemony over the world and all of that into some interesting dire straits. You had at the very end of the retrograde a declaration that China was a currency manipulator by Washington, by the mm-hmm. Secretary of Treasury. And that's a very significant declaration in a trade war. As you and I know, even months before the election, when I was writing my first of three planned books on Trump, that I knew that he was going to do this trade war and go all the way into it as leverage for using the pain. I also said on your show earlier this year and wrote about it at the beginning of this year that astrology showed that Trump had his best opportunity of a very bold breakthrough with this trade war going his way, lowering the power of the yuan to its reality financially by May. And it almost happened, because that's the thing about real prophecy. It's not fixed. It almost happened. And then it reminded me what happened then was what happened in 1998, 99, when Clinton had almost gotten Yasser Arafat and Ehud Barak of Israel and the Arafat of Palestine to make the deal that would have ended all the problems between Israelis and Palestinians. But then Arafat wanted to do another deal. He wanted to push one more deal. He didn't know when to stop. And I'm afraid that that's what our president may have done. And this has now triggered a move towards what I feared is a long-term trade war, where the Chinese are going to wait it out through the election. Now, with the idea of, because I said this is the one Achilles heel for the president, not having the two terms that I saw astrologically possible.
Well, and farmers who all supported him in 2016 are all upset now.
Well, and not only that, he is going to pay out of the public fund to keep, he's literally buying votes, some people contend, because he's going to cover the billions that they've lost to keep them in his corner, some people say. Now, the thing is, this leads right into something else that has also flowered since, you know, we arranged to have the show, so many things happening, is in the last few days, there's been a very significant sign of something I've been looking at for a long, long time. When's the next recession coming?
Right.
And now there are indications since the 14th of August, when we had the 800-point drop, that the curve indicator of the bond markets is doing what it did now, like it did in 2006. Basically nearly 2 years out. It's an early indicator, an indicator that the reason why all those points went down is it's an indicator that has, in seven recessions over the last 50 years, come up within 24 or 22 months. There's always a recession afterwards. So people started to sell against the market. And so even though it was a real shock in the mid-August, and, you know, it was one of several where we lost almost the same amount of points in early August, all of that is coming out of the rash decisions that are going on, you know, at the end of the retrograde, at beginning of August, August 2nd. So what that simply means is that we are within... We could be well within a situation that recession is coming, but my strong feeling astrologically is that just watch out for it to come in early, at the end of 2020. I have this feeling that because certain large Earth planets involved in power and money and finance are in play, and they're at their most harmonious play to keep the establishment, which is systemically flawed, functioning and allowing to get away with things, kicking things down the road of time, that it's very likely that you will not see the real pain of the recession hit until December of 2020. When Saturn in mid-December moves out of Capricorn into Aquarius.
Well, anything he can do to push it back before the election will help him.
Well, that would be 6 weeks after the election.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a it's an intriguing thing where to go next? I mean, there are these seven indicators that I wanted to talk to you about, everybody, that are probably not being talked a lot about in the mainstream news. But, you know, you have the tariff war between U.S. and China. That's the first indicator of that we're heading towards something that's escalating and
yes,
speeding up. And as many of my clients who I do private readings for, they ask me a lot of things on my online readings, but they a lot of the theme that's come up a lot is, when's the recession? I was telling them, well, if... Plan for your businesses to function well if Trump can have this breakthrough in May of this year. But if he doesn't, he will speed up the indicators of a recession. And unfortunately, and I said it would be around September, October of this year. So we'll see if that happens. Here's the indicators that are active now. I said the tariff war is escalating. Number two is U.S. manufacturing section is down. Germany is in recession now. And I've been saying for 5 years that would be the trigger for Europe to have a cold, economically speaking, and make America sneeze. China's debt crisis. This is something that a lot of people in the West don't understand. The state industries, which are a secondary core economy in China because of the communist capitalist fix, have borrowed heavily, and they are, as well as a lot of consumers, and the banks are weighed down by loans that may never get paid.
Oh, well, that would be a disaster. John, hold on. We're at the break already, but we'll come back more with John Hoag throughout the night. We will be talking about his thoughts on the Antichrist. The 50th anniversary, of course, this year of the moon landing. We'll get his reaction based on Nostradamus and much more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, John Hoag with us as we talk about prophecy. And John, let's get back into what you were picking us up. We were talking about China and some other issues, and you were spot on with that, by the way.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yes. A lot of times I wish I was wrong on these things. It's not like a lot of people think, oh, well, you wanted this to happen, and no, I'm just the mailman.
You don't kill the messenger, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's you know, a number of things that happened during this retrograde, but not just only the retrograde. It's important for everybody because a lot of people kind of know, if they don't know much about astrology, they know about the retrograde. It's often a joke when people say, well, you know, the car broke down because Mercury.
Yeah, blame Mercury. Everything on Mercury retrograde.
Yeah,
right?
It's a running joke amongst astrologers, but what it really means in a political astrological context, which is like reading collective nations and people, is that it happens every 4 months that you have 3 weeks where Mercury goes backwards in the sky. And usually at the beginning of those 3 weeks and about 5 days after the 3 weeks of retrograde backward motion goes forward, it's kind of a Keystone Cop moment where if everybody's trying to get through the door at the same time and everybody falls over on top of themselves. So oddly enough, a lot of the most rash things that happen in decisions, especially with Mercury being the ruler of the mind, and in the case of America especially, it's in Cancer, so it's related to economic cycles and with the tug of war with Capricorn. Long story short, important things happen, and one of the other things that was decided exactly on the day that the retrograde ended and went forward were two things. It was decided officially to kill the Intermediate Range Missile Treaty, the INF Treaty, which Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev had signed in the late 80s and significantly brought the two countries closer and closer to the end of the Cold War, the last Cold War, I said, because, you know, as you know, in April 2014, I declared on your show that we're in a new Cold War.
And we are.
We are. Yeah. And so what has happened since 2002 and now on August 2nd of this closing month are significant kicking out of two pillars of the three pillars that have literally kept arms control in the world going. And we are in 2021. I keep coming back to 2021. It's a big year for a lot of shocking changes. That we have the new START, the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, that is going to be needed to be renewed. But I foresee the situation where it will not be renewed, and that will be the final pillar, where these intermediate range missiles deal with missiles that are fired on land from 500 kilometer range to 5,500 kilometer range. That kind of took all those Pershing missiles and Russian Scud missiles out of the situation in the Warsaw Pact and the NATO forces. You know, Europe was covered in intermediate range missiles. And that was a big step to easing the tension of the Cold War. But in this case, the ABM Treaty was unilaterally left by the United States in 2002, which meant that, you know, the whole idea that if you launched your strategic missiles on Russia or vice versa, that you would also be destroyed 30 minutes later. But if somebody has the ability to shoot down your missiles before they get there, then it opens the opportunity of somebody committing a first strike. It's a very destabilizing thing to back out of a treaty that prevented that from happening and then start to build missile bases all around Russia and in China. So that was the first step. Now this was done to the INF treaty was dropped out of, but already military-industrial complex in the United States was already preparing to build hundreds of missiles over a year before this thing died. So, and on the very same day, the newly minted former Raytheon CEO of the military-industrial complex has become our new head of the Pentagon, was in Australia and asked in Canberra, the capital, is it true that you would like to see intermediate-range missiles in Australia pointed at China? He said, I would. I hope to have it happening in a few months, although things usually take a little longer. Now, the Australian government demurred and said, we don't want that to happen because we're trying to have good relations with China. Now, the indications are that the Philippines might take that offer, and I would even say in my notes for my third book on Trump, which will be out in the early part of this coming year, back in 2017, I was talking about a situation where it's kind of the Cuban Missile Crisis repeated, only the island isn't Cuba, 100 miles off the United States with missiles in it. The island is Taiwan, where the United States has put its military assets upon. And having the same shocking reaction to the mainland Chinese, which then gets to so these are things that were happening in the few days as it went forward. The Mercury,
are they happening faster than you thought?
Yes and no. I mean, it's just I'm almost like I'm not even trying to think in those terms. I'm trying to stay ahead of it. And at least when the blow happens, then stay ahead of what the ramifications are.
Right.
I mean, a lot of retrogrades don't have these kinds of impacts. But, I mean, I had to write a whole series of articles in my last kind of e-magazine at hoaxprophecy.com about these issues. And there's a couple more. There's this situation in Hong Kong.
Which is out of control, I think.
Well, it's a new color revolution, like the Orange Revolution in Ukraine in the first decade of the new century. Only I called it in an article, this is color me red, white, and blue.
Are we fueling that?
Yes, we are very much. I mean, I've seen the photographs of U.S. dignitaries talking to the main leaders of the movement. The fact that it started with extradition laws, I mean, yeah, to be fair, Beijing, since 1997, when Hong Kong was an English colony and it was moved to China, they did this arrangement of two Chinas, I mean, one China, two governments.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that that I've noticed that Beijing has tried stress tests to see how much they can get away with by kind of obfuscating and taking freedoms away from Hong Kong. Movement that came hundreds of thousands of people on the streets, mostly students on their summer break, coming out and saying, take this extradition bill away, that felt authentically a spontaneous movement of people, just like the umbrella movement that happened in 2014 for similar problems. But then suddenly there was a thing that reminded me of the other color revolutions that the NSA and the CIA did around the world, where suddenly waved the American flags and the Union Jacks, and now we have all these other demands that are rather opaque, like we want democracy. What kind of democracy? We want all the people who were arrested for violent acts, we want them pardoned. And everything that I'm seeing there, it feels to me, and this is one that can blow up any moment, is it feels to me that this is a manipulation, a very cynical manipulation of strategic thinkers and neocons who are going to use these kids to create a situation of a second Tiananmen Square situation where the Chinese army comes in to restore order.
And they will try to restore it.
You watch this weekend, George. There's a big showdown coming Saturday where there's a major demonstration that's going to happen. The Hong Kong police have said because of the violence, I just watched the news conference with them, because of the threats of violence, we're not going to do anything. They've actually been very restrained. The violence has really been from the other side, which is also a bit like this colored revolution stuff the U.S. does. they say that we will not respond, but if violence is thrown upon us, we will respond. And so there could be a huge clash on Saturday. So watch out for that.
We'll keep our eyes.
Point is to create a situation where the Red Chinese take the bait, march in the army, and everybody then in Washington can say, look at these terrible people, they're totalitarian, blah, blah, and it's part of the trade war. And this brings me to another issue with our new Raytheon man in the Pentagon, who has very much interest in the military-industrial complex, getting more weapons, in my opinion. And he's already talking about a more militarizing of the situation with China and the United States, bringing more U.S. military assets to bear and building bases. Now, I would even say this will lead all the way to Taiwan. And so there's an old adage that it starts with trade wars and it ends with shooting wars. And there are forces in our government that are really pushing this to a shooting war. And so,
but China has nukes, John.
Yes, and this is the issue, too. It's ironic because, you know, President Putin of Russia was actually on the side of Trump's situation where he was trying to convince Beijing to, you know, it's true, the IMF treaty didn't cover the arsenal of Chinese intermediate-range missiles. I mean, Trump has a point, he said. And, I mean, we won't hear this in the mainstream news because he's supposed to be the evil version of Dobby from Harry Potter. But anyway, Putin was actually trying to get Beijing to go to the table, and I hope actually it might happen, where there might be a new intermediate-range missile treaty that would include China. But then when the currency thing happened at the end of the retrograde, where they called him a currency manipulator, that put a kibosh on that happening,
yeah.
And the Russians sided with China.
Yeah,
but
that's horrible
not going to be reported in the mainstream.
That was horrible timing. Are you concerned of a war, an actual war?
On several fronts. I mean, I was happy to see that my concern written earlier about this retrograde ending with a war with Iran didn't actually happen. But it did happen with another an issue of rash decisions, and they go now beyond, I'll take you beyond the American rash decisions to what happened on the 1st of August when Pakistan actually attacked a forward position on the line of control in Kashmir, and Pakistani soldiers and terrorists were shot down and collected by the Indians, so they report. Then, right after that, on the 5th, as the retrograde, those first 5 days, end of August 2nd, so it's day three, in the 5 days I was warning people, Prime Minister Modi of India made good his promise that he's been trying to do since his first term in 2014. He absorbed the Indian-held Kashmir and declared it part of the Indian State Union.
He basically took it, didn't he?
He took his autonomy. Article 370, which had been in the Indian Constitution, which, by the way, even though people have yelled that he couldn't do that, actually he had a loophole. The legislature of the autonomous Kashmiri government had no jurisdiction over national security or threats to India. So it's a twist, you know, it's the way politicians get around things. But it was through that excuse and also by intimidating the Pakistanis. Now, what's going to happen is, sorry, not the Pakistanis, the Kashmiris. What is happening now is that India is opening up Kashmir to non-Kashmiris to live there from India. So basically, there'll be a flood of Indian money and people. And it may very well be to change the demographics of the Kashmiri people.
They're basically going to occupy it.
Yeah. And also now it's no longer Pakistan is no lily white person in this situation. Pakistanis have bases for the terrorists, the Kashmiris. I mean, the thing was.
And nukes.
Supposed to be, yeah, well, they're all together. There's about 150 to 200 nukes between the two countries. And that's the other big war front that you're not hearing a lot about in the West, but it's, I used to live in India, and I lived through a couple of these threats where I was thinking, my God, I was 8 years old when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and it really kind of changed my view, and I became kind of a news hound after that because of the shock of it. And there I am in India again, and I'm going, my God, I got a target on my back, and now I'm in India.
Well, I got to say, too, John, you've got your pulse on current events better than anybody I've ever talked to.
Well, part of it's kind of a symphony of tools that I use. Intuitive, of course, prophecy, of course, but I also vet over years good news sources, sources that are kind of surprising, especially because some of the sources that have been consistently accurate in their reporting are those that are actually maligned by the U.S. government, but for instance, like RT America and Russia Today. They're actually, I would say, on YouTube and other places, they're some of the finest sources. Consortium News, Truthdig, Chris Hedges, other Seymour Hersh. There are still people out there, and, you know, most people don't have the time. This is my job, so I'm kind of a weird prophecy journalist.
Yes.
And so my full-time job is to find and vet these people over decades and see if they're right or not. I mean, I even look at Debka.com, which is a front for the Mossad, not so much because of what they're interpreting is the end result of their intelligence, but usually it's really good data.
It's good news coverage.
But they use it to propagate. Often Mossad will use information to propagate a certain view, especially mm-hmm. with America, so they remain allies to the Israeli state. So, but even with that said, I look at a lot of what they say, and I go, okay, I know what they're trying to twist this into, but this is actually good details. So, you know, I've learned over the years to look at every other news agency in the world, how they always can see what's wrong in the other news agency, but they're blind to their own, the big beam of wood in their eye, but they see the sliver in the eye of the other guy. So I'm a sliver collector. That's a very important part of the objective side of my subjective work.
Since you've been doing this, and you've been doing it for years and years and years, have you ever found a time period like now that seems to be so tense, so confusing, and everything seems to be up in the air?
No, not anything like this now. And yeah, I've been at it a long time. For instance, I've been on the trail of the issue of climate since 1973. I have been writing articles on Nostradamus' prophecies around the world after spending 10 years to learn what's necessary since 1983. And that's 2,200 articles and 48 books ago. So it's a, it's one of the things that I have a new book coming out that's kind of really necessary in the world of Nostradamus. Nostradamus has never been written about more than he is now. I mean, what happened on the 15th of April of this year when Notre Dame burned was as significant in the world of Nostradamus as 9/11. Everybody was trying to find prophecies about what he might have said about the fire.
Boy, did people forget about that, too. Stay with us, John. We're at the top of the hour. Let's come back and talk about Nostradamus. His predictions, did he see the moon landing? We'll get your take on that. And is he the third and final Antichrist?